while the world whizzes by. Enjoy a moment of me time with Tim Horton's $6 breakfast bundle. Savor a small hot or iced coffee, then add your choice of a mouth-watering hot breakfast sandwich and a crispy golden hash brown and your pick of a classic donut.
Yeah.
All for $6, all just for you. Make your mornings all about me time with our $6 breakfast bundle. Available at your neighborhood Tim Hortons. Price and participation vary. Terms apply.
Gerhardt's back.
The more things change, the more they stay the same.
From NJ1015.com, this is the new Jim Gerhardt Podcast.
I'm Bob Williams, and right to my side, it's our humble host, Jim Gerhardt. Good morning, Jim.
Well, good morning, everyone. You're asking me, what is my sartorially splendid wrapping today?
Yes.
Okay.
What are you wearing there?
Yeah, that's why you were commenting on that. Can you see that? Can you get it?
I think it says Stone Pony.
It's my Stone Pony shirt. I wear this in recognition of Bruce Springsteen's ordeal.
Right.
I thought that would be appropriate.
Yep, we got to talk about Bruce. We got a whole bunch of other Jersey stuff coming up. Where do we begin this morning?
I'll tell you where we begin. You had pointed this out because I was unaware of it. Our governor had gone on radio and he had explained the new wrinkles in the elusive marijuana law.
Yes.
That's coming up, but he did it on almost an obscure station in New York. It was a very specialty station.
He did it on non-New York radio station.
Yeah, all of a sudden you blew because
he continues to avoid New Jersey's biggest radio station with the largest audience of voters and citizens who are very well informed and really are in tune to what's going on and are primarily affected. The governor decided, as he's done many times, to avoid New Jersey 101.5 and to go to other radio stations, which may be a little bit more welcoming to him and not it being asking objective questions and really holding him to the issues at hand. He decided to go to a radio station out of New York City that focuses on young listeners. Impressionable listeners who are primarily affected by the new weed laws here in New Jersey. And a lot of loopholes, Jim, that I think a lot of people who voted for illegal weed here in New Jersey weren't bargaining for, like very limited control by the police for underage use of marijuana and things like that. The governor continues to avoid this radio station. We have over it, and we've had it since you were the morning host. We have over like 900,000 to 1 million listeners per week, New Jersey voters. And he continues to avoid the format of speaking directly. He's avoided most long form programming, news programming that we've offered over the years. He declined to do a regular Ask the Governor program. First governor in the history of the radio station to decline to do that. He's had very limited contact, direct contact, unscripted contact with our audience. Now, that's not to say that the administration does not give full access to our news department. They do very well. David Matthau and all of our reporters have access. They get the answers they needed. But when it comes to unscripted dialogue between the governor and our audience, it's non-existent. Yet he'll go on a softball sort of radio station where they're going to be friendly to him. Not that we're going to be hostile, but we're going to be fair in the questions that we ask and the audience is going to ask, as we always have been, Jim.
The governor, remember, is in a re-election campaign right now.
Yes.
He is in the re-election mode, and you don't notice that because of the other stuff going on, but essentially is this. I don't know by what logic he will not appear on this radio station. Presumably, he is afraid to face our audience or this segment of the population. Now, we've done this for years. Eric Scott has done a masterful job of this over the years. I had the pleasure of doing it back in some of the Florio and the Whitman years, the Ask the Governor program. But that's been a mainstay. Now, as far as audience is concerned, at one time, and I'm assuming it's continued, this radio station, New Jersey 101.5, had the highest audience of any FM talk radio station in the country.
Yes.
And so there's very fertile ground out there for somebody to get their point across. And I used to sit there about every other week or so or Corzine. And, you know, in light of this, you have to acknowledge a governor who went out under something of a cloud, not of disgrace, but a dark cloud, which was Jim McGreevy. And looking back, he not only was the governor, as I've said many times, who got more accomplished for New Jersey than any other governor of his time and since then, but he had courage. He would come in and face Eric Scott, who is an absolute masterful interviewer. Eric would pin him right up into a corner on issues, but he never blew his cool. He never got mad. We were all friends when he left the studio, and he had guts. The courage to face up to his own actions.
Right.
I would have to assume that this governor does not do that program because he feels, for some reason or other, that he's going to be at some kind of a disadvantage. And perhaps he doesn't feel the confidence in himself in that area that he can withstand what would be some critical questions.
And this governor continues to avoid all talk shows here. Obviously, everyone knows the radio station has two folds. It's straight news during the newscast and strong opinion by the hosts. But the governor refuses to be part of either one of those long form platforms. He's been invited repeatedly to be on any show. And again, he's been offered to do those long form public affairs shows. Where was the governor? Where's the governor been through the pandemic? Where was the governor last month with that major snowstorm, one of the biggest in our history? We would love to have heard from him to tell us how the plows are doing and what we can expect and things like that. We're looking for guidance. You know, look at Governor Christie, you know, on the same lines as Governor McGreevy. Those guys, you know, they took their lumps and, it, you know, fairly so. They came in there and they were brave. They stood up to the audience and they answered the questions and they were not afraid of speaking off script to the.
I want to get to something now. You brought up that he was talking about the new marijuana law, which is completely inexplicable to me.
Yes.
It's like, as with so many other matters, we have gone so far down the rabbit hole that nobody can figure this out. Let me turn to Dan Alexander now, our newsman.
Morning.
Good morning.
I would like for you, if you will, please, to enlighten us about the aspect of this new law, which is what dragged on for years now. And it's apparently we're not going to get any action on it. Finally, you're not going to get to smoke weed, at least for another year. It would have here. But let's get to this part of the law enforcement being forbidden to notify parents. As I understand it, they're forbidden to notify parents if your child is caught either using alcohol or illegal drugs.
Well, we have a
We have a
Q&A on our website and on our free app that Sergio Bichao and Aaron Vogt put together. Kind of answering a lot of these questions, but to your particular issue, basically police cannot stop an offender. They can't charge you with having marijuana solely on smell. So in other words, they stop you, they smell the marijuana, they can't just assume you have marijuana. And that's kind of that's the crux of the issue is when they stop you.
Does that go for dogs too? Oh, I'm serious.
But what the law does is that so the voters approved a ballot referendum in November. Recreational marijuana sales are now permitted under the legislation, pending the physical marketplaces. So that's the next step. How are you going to sell it? In other words, you're not going to be able to go to Wawa and buy marijuana, but you have to go to a certain marketplace, and that's what the legislation that was signed by the governor, but it was part of it, a big part of it, was that these marketplaces are now have to be established. So now once recreational sales begin, adults 21 and older can purchase up to 1 ounce of weed at a time. And this doesn't affect the medical marijuana. That's a whole separate issue. This is just recreational use.
Well, no, I want to get back to this business with notifying kids' parents.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that grabbed me with that is another erosion of parental responsibility. And this is not because the parents are declining it. There was a case in California in which the school a school or schools in one of the districts had started giving questionnaires out to elementary school students, questioning them about their sex life. And these are things that kids knew nothing about, but they were asking, have you ever felt inclined, any strange feeling with people of the same gender, you know, stuff like that. Parents were up in arms. They went to court. They sued. The court, and I believe this was this Mary Madcap Scamps at the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals out there, they ruled in favor of the school system and the survey because they said it is not the parents' responsibility to guide kids into their place in the world. It is a responsibility of the education system, which is to say the government. So this is definitely taking responsibility for kids out of the hands of, yes, of the parent. And it seemed to me this is something that if you cannot notify a parent, if you're 13-year-old or something, it is caught with illegal drugs.
Well, let me read you from our Q&A. So the question, what right. about, it says, anyone younger than 21 caught with any amount of marijuana, cannabis, hashish, or alcohol in any public place, including a school, now gets a written warning for a first offense. That warning must include the person's name, address, and date of birth, but will not be sent or provided to a parent or guardian. Those younger than 21 caught a second time drinking pot, drinking or with weed in their possession, get another written warning along with materials on community drug treatment services. For those younger than 18, the warnings for both offenses then get sent to a parent or guardian. So in other words, it's going to take two times for a parent to be notified.
You get two freebies. And then at some point, they presumably are urged anyway. I don't know if it's mandatory, but they notify the parents. Well, by the time they notify the parents, the kid could be hooked.
Yes.
Is that not true?
You could make that argument.
Right. Well,
factions that say that, I know we're getting into a different discussion here, but certain factions say that the brain is not completely developed until it's in its early 20s or early to mid-20s. So you may be doing some developmental issues to someone who trying pot at an early age, 16, 17-ish.
Absolutely, because some children very young, they are somehow neurologically inclined toward addictive behavior. Yeah. I don't know this has me so befuddled, this whole world that we
happening with New Jersey and the governor this week, the budget. We're discussing the budget beforehand. We're talking, it's like it doesn't add up, the math. I mean, basically, just to throw it out there, I'm sure Dan can expound upon this, but apparently this budget calls for 11% increase in spending across the board, different areas, yet there is no provision for increased taxes or any additional fees or increases in fees. It seems like it's not adding up. How do you add spending without bringing in more receipts?
Now, here you have a state that's broke anyway, so hugely in debt and behind in their obligations. They're going to spend incalculable amounts of money and yet not increase any source of revenue to cover it. So if this is not putting all our resources in a bucket and hanging it up and poking a hole in the bottom of it.
Yeah.
It makes no sense. This is what Murphomatics. This may come under the heading of the thing we talked about last week, this idiotic move to, what was it, to remove racism from mathematics.
Yes.
By proclaiming
that mathematics, correct answer.
Yeah. Mathematics need not be precise. And any answer you put down is fine. I think he must have bought into that.
Yeah. Your point, let's just do a little bit of math ourselves here, Jim. Governors, this is his fourth budget, right? Fourth budget. The previous three have included major tax increases across the board to offset for his spending initiatives. That's the first 3 years. Now, all of a sudden, there is no increase. And there is an increase, but there's no tax increase. I wonder, is this an election year, perhaps?
That's where this comes from and where it goes. I do not know. I think one, I would not be surprised now if they find out that, okay, we're going to cut by, we're going to reduce school spending, although I think he said they're going to increase school spending. Maybe aid to municipalities. Great. We'll save money. We'll cut back what we give municipalities. Where's the municipality? What are they going to do? They're going to turn around and shove it to you in increased property tax,
of course,
which is the great abomination in New Jersey to start with.
Eric Scott wrote a piece.
There's no hope for any reform in that area, the property tax situation, anyway, in the foreseeable future. It's, I've got to read this piece. You had sent me this. I think this was from Kurt Vonnegut, if I'm not mistaken. I believe I remember reading this in a book I think he wrote back in the 90s, and it was called, the book is called Man Without a Country. But, and he makes a case for this, the mental stability of a big, important people. And he says, here was the quote, and boy, does this ring a bell. Imagine a small handful of ridiculously wealthy, powerful psychopaths. Imagine they could make you believe anything they wanted by simply controlling what they put on TV.
Whoa.
It's what we got. That's what we've got. Speaking of that, I will start here by a glance at the text. This is Eric Frome, the great psychiatrist and humanitarian, who said, the lust for power is not rooted in strength, but rather in weakness. Now, you can make an excellent case that everybody, well, I would say most, who are in these high positions of power, be political, technological, corporate, or sociopath to some extent or another. You have to be to get there, I would think.
Yeah.
And so here we have a handful of ridiculously wealthy, powerful psychopaths, people with some loose screws, whose only concern is themselves and their own indulgences. And they also have encaptured this media who will make you believe anything they want to tell you without any critical examination of the facts.
Yes.
Because, as you know, we have been cut off in direct violation of the First Amendment, cut off from free communication. Now we can only have communication that is in favor of this this ruling combination that we have, this is going on right now. I thought of something else interesting. I saw a story that said that there's some critical backlash to Bezos. In fact, he's going to get a communication from a lot of people who are chiding him for refusing to sell on his platform, Amazon, books and material by conservative authors.
Right, right.
And so it seemed like, well, this is a ridiculous political move, which, of course, he'll get away with. But it occurred to me, this is a rather brilliant commercial move on Bezos' part. Amazon is the largest retailer for China.
Yeah, right.
It is the largest Chinese goods retail outlet in the world. Amazon sells more of it than anybody else. And so if you have an administration or if you have opposition abroad in the land to allowing China to continue unchecked with their effect on the American economy, then his corporation makes out like bandits. They continue to. But if you have a strong president and administration who is going to try to rein in the Chinese influence, or at least ameliorate it to the extent that we can sort of coexist economically in the world, then that is not to Amazon's advantage. Or these other corporations who are simply jumped into bed with the capitalists jumped into bed with the revolutionaries, because the revolutionaries at this point anyway will allow the capitalists to continue growing and stashing what has been estimated. One estimate I saw, I think I'd mentioned this before, something like $32 trillion in offshore tax havens. Of the world, while the money is sucked out of the domestic pool of resources, which keep wages and jobs and opportunities down.
Right.
So, as much as I don't like it to think it, I don't think this is going to end well. Somehow, I don't think it's going to end well. I again, you know, there's an old saying, be careful what you ask for because you may get it. For years, when I was doing the morning show, I used to point out foibles of the capitalism on steroids, as I used to say. It's gone completely too far. They say we need a reset button pushed. Now, my view was that if we had a, and the reset button could only happen because we're so hysterically and maniacally entrenched in this system of greed, enterprise, profit, that the only way I could see would be a catastrophe of some kind or a great somehow convolution.
Right.
And I thought it would be economic. A big economic bubble would burst, would be one thing, or a natural disaster of large proportion. And why I thought that is, having been around for a long time, I lived through the Great Depression and World War II, both of which had brought people together. There was a great unity then. Even in very bad times, the people were together. There was a sense of unity. And feeling for one another, a fellow feeling. That is not the case because this catastrophe, which I think is this new left takeover, has torn people further apart. It's had the complete opposite effect of what I had assumed. And so I, instead of unifying, we have been balkanized by race, by ideology, by economics, by profession, into this balkanized mass, everybody at everybody else's throat, contesting for their share. And of course, all the groups now that supported this move to the left want payback. They want their share of it, and they started screaming for that, and they're getting it more and more.
Right, and that's where this part of this...
I can only see it going downhill. It can't... This does not compute. As Robbie the Robot used to say.
And that's why the big argument over the new stimulus bill. A lot of it, apparently, from what we're hearing, involves payback to a lot of the Democratic supporters that got Biden and the crew elected there. I mean, $1.9 trillion. I mean, that should fix a lot of problems if it goes to the right spots. But it also is going where it shouldn't be going for paybacks and things like
this. Well, this was the understanding when the Democratic presidential campaign and the congressional campaign was that you back us and then we will look favorably upon your special interests. Well, their special interests are simply very damaging to government. And also you throw into this move from the left to do away, this is an overall thing, with the concept of nations. This goes toward the globalism, the one world, which I think the elite feel this is wonderful because we will get to rule the world. And the commercial, the corporate people, they, okay, wonderful, because then again, we will open up all of these markets now, and we will still have control over these monopolies to satisfy the demands worldwide in the markets. And the tech people, by saying, okay, we will control thought. Man, what a great ego boost that is.
Right.
They had a reporter, NBC, I don't know the name, it was a lady reporter, some time ago, when someone brought up the question of the news people getting involved in politics. But anyway, she said, it is... As journalists so-called, is our job to tell people what to think. That's a scary thought, but I think this is in the head of these egomaniacs who are on the tube. Oh, I wanted to bring up something. We have a limited amount of time here. Talk about deja vu all over again. Senator Ted Cruz of Texas is being excoriated now and vilified because when the great storm came into Texas, which nobody expected, it was devastating. He, in the early part of that, or maybe before it started, got on a plane, took his family to Cancun,
right,
to a nice place out of the bad weather and the crisis. And then he came back. But anyway, the wolf pack in the media is after him because he did that. Now, let's go back 10 years. This would have been in the winter, I believe, of 2010, 2011, thereabouts. Chris Christie was a fairly new governor at the time. had not been in office certainly more than a year.
Yeah, that was his
first. It was a great storm that was predicted and actually came to pass in New Jersey, a great winter snowstorm that bound up parts certainly of Ocean County, notably, but then most of the rest of the state. In Brick, for example, you couldn't move. You couldn't get out. You couldn't get on the street, out of your house. Emergency equipment couldn't move. So at the beginning of that crisis, Governor Christie got on a plane with his family and went to Disney World. Now, you remember that?
Yep. Oh, yeah. And he got called on it. Absolutely.
But he didn't get called very much and very long, because what happened was, and I don't believe this was anything ingenious on his part. It was probably a natural instinct, but it worked. And he based the whole thing. Any criticism was met with the fact that Christie said, but I had promised my family I would take them. And I saw this happen in a group of people I was sitting at one time when this came up. The first expression was that, well, boy, he certainly got out of that. He's the leader. He should have stayed in the state. Somebody else said, yes, but he had promised his family. The family comes first. He's a good family man. And that carried the day.
And then
the fact that he made a promise to, and he didn't come back, as Cruz did.
And then
soon
thereafter, he ordered his FEMA fleece, which he wore for the rest of his term during types of disasters.
That was another matter. That was his Sandy.
Yeah, his Hurricane Sandy fleece.
That was his finest hour. That was.
Yeah.
I was in the company of the governor the night that that hit. And it was going on. It was howling. He was at the radio station. He was doing the Ask the Governor show that you brought up on the night that Sandy hit. And the governor had brought his family, at least the girls and Mrs. Christie, to the station. And then when he got through the program with Eric, they were going to go up to Drumthwack at the governor's mansion to get out of the storm. Well, the storm was raging because I know I had my Rottweiler Blitz with me that night. He was about a year old. I took him out at one time to go pee-pee and or poo-poo out behind the radio station, and he sort of blew out to the end of the leash. It caught him broadside, and it was a heck of a storm going on. But anyway, the governor was there that night and went in and did the program with Eric. And to show you, getting back to how you opened this with the importance of the governor communicating on this radio station, that was important enough to Governor Christie to fulfill his obligation to spend the 8 to 9 hour with Eric on the, that he would put off running for shelter in a bad storm.
Right.
He took that obligation very seriously. In fact, when he went into the studio, he turned around to me and says, come on in here with us. And I said, no, I can't. He said, come on. No, because the program was Eric's baby. And that was a sacred a sacred event on the radio station, because Eric handled these programs just beautifully.
Yeah.
Ain't no way I was going to sit in there and get in the way of that.
Right.
So anyway.
Those were the days, Jim. Those were the days.
I got to mention a couple of things before we go. The asininities of the week, if I could take a second. I saw a thing how to plan. This was online. How to plan a gender neutral baby shower.
Okay.
Because pink and blue is sexist. It's probably racist, too. Everything else is. But right now, we'll stick with that. So in order to have a baby shower nowadays, no pink or blue. Everything must be a neutral color. So I pass that out for people who are going to a baby shower. Now, another one is that proscribed now, never to be said in a business sense, I need you too. You know, I'll say, I need you to go get this, or I need you to comment on that, or I need you to get a report on this. Because when you say to somebody, I need you to, that indicates privilege, that you have the privilege of. The next thing, I guess, is, again, I keep saying the World Series of Asininity, but we have these World Series every day. Or breastfeeding, the term breastfeeding is out. It cannot be used.
Really?
I think you saw that, if I'm not mistaken. Breastfeeding, now you have to say that a baby is chest feeding, because to say breastfeeding invokes what, salacious thoughts. Now, I don't think the baby has salacious thoughts.
No.
And I don't think anybody else does either. except the people who come up with this crap.
Right.
And so these are the witch sniffers, I guess. They have to keep coming up with this stuff because, remember, we're just sitting out here, gaga, what's going on? These people are somehow earning a living doing this.
Yeah.
In one form or another, whether in journalism or becoming a diversity monitor, you have to go out there and sniff for the witches. If you don't find any, it's like the witch sniffer in the 13th century. If he didn't sniff up any witches, he didn't get paid. Right. And so these people, how are you going to keep a six-figure job or better as a diversity monitor if you don't find any breaches of diversity rules? You can't do it. All right, I had to get that in. And there's so much, so many things to talk about here. But I would get back to end this like I did last week. This is a quote from Edward R. Murrow, a real journalist, like Dan Alexander is here, that there aren't too many of them left. And Edward R. Murrow said, a nation of sheep will beget a government of wolves. So ponder that.
Yeah. Well,
put that in your pipe and smoke it. Put that in your cow and milk it. With all the old expressions. Listen, God bless you. God be with you and keep you. Give us the serenity to accept as much of this as we can. And whatever you do to resist it, don't let it inside. Don't let it tear you up. Don't let it stress you out.
Yeah.
I think it ain't going to end well, but I want you to end well. Yeah. So as General Eisenhower once said, illegitimum non carborundum. Which means, Bob, don't let the bastards grind you down.
I'll try not to, Jim. Hey, okay. A lot of great reading here this week. Every follow up with David Matthau, Michael Simons, and Dino Flemmi on all the stories that we talked about today. You can catch our podcast on demand anytime you want at NJ1015.com on the station app and all of our platforms. We are here every Thursday at 10:30 here on Facebook Live. Much thanks to our director and our producer, Dan Alexander, and to our host, Jim Gerhart. Thanks again, Jim, and to everybody out there, have a great week, and thanks for being with us.
Fall's here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.